Hello there, loyal listeners. Whoever and however many may still be there, this is Dana Glass broadcasting via pre-recording after a 9-month hiatus from the program, an unintentional hiatus. I have just reacquired my recording equipment from the pawn shop. I sold a lot of plasma to get there and was just informed that that will no longer be an option for me, as it seems somewhere along the line I have contracted various forms of hepatitis. That does not bode well for me or my future, but that should not be your concern. What I do recognize as your concern is my inability to maintain a regular schedule of this program that you have come to know and trust, and for that I apologize. I think it's time for me to just look myself in the mirror and admit that I am bad at this. I needed a team. This is not something I can do on my own. I'd be surprised if this was even recording into this device. We haven't had any live shows, and honestly, I'm not sure why I am even doing this. But I have cobbled together some recordings from past shows, and, well, here they are, because I'm stuck in this cycle, and this is the only life I know. So let's jump in. After a year of re-examining his life, our first author left his 14-year career as a physical education teacher to pursue his one true passion. Here to read from highlights of his self-published debut poetry collection, Sweatin', please enjoy Nicholas McCann, also known as Mr. McCann.
Hello. Okay. Before I thrill you with my titillizing poetry, I want to take a minute to thank the Hawkins Public School District for the past decade and a half of employment. Even though I gave you the best years of my life, and you then unceremoniously asked me to voluntarily resign because the parents of the kids these days can't handle the truth about their children. And I'm what you call a relic of an age past. Anyway, a big thank you to Martha, the lunch lady, who always provided me with sustenance and extra servings of meatloaf. And lastly, to the new principal, Mr. Sandusky, a big kiss my ass. And now to the poetry. This one is entitled Burn. Up the rope, boy, up the rope. Feel those balls burn. Pull all you want with those dainty arms, cause what's another failed turn? Thank you. This next one is dedicated to Janice Donaldson, the drama teacher in room 401. This one's entitled Smoke Show. 8 a.m., teacher's lounge. You're not here, I'll wait around to catch a glimpse, perhaps a chance to chaperone another dance. Together again, just you and me. Make my move, I guess we'll see. So most teachers don't get the chance to educate their own children. I was one of the lucky ones, as I got to teach my son Butch, whom was conceived during my first marriage. That didn't work out. This next piece of verbal art is for you, Butch. It's entitled Butch. Butchy boy, my pride and joy, you're thicker than a barn door. You run so fast, you bust your ass. I bet those cheeks are sore. As a reminder to everyone in the audience, please make sure that you take a protein shake within 45 minutes of finishing your workout as to get the maximal and optimal absorption. And finally, for something that's very close and dear to me, my piece of resistance, if you will. This is entitled Chronos' Hunger. Violent, blustery winds of change bring a chill to these warmest of summer days. The grip of time loosens not for woman, man, or babe. Another born, another raised, another loved, another grave. Again, it waits for none. Money, possessions, love, and fame were the same when it's all done. Thank you for that. I want to remind you to donate to your local teachers union, because there's lots of teachers out there that don't even have pencils, and I don't know how you teach kids without pencils. So once again, Mr. Sandusky, kiss my ass.
Okay, well, that was an author, as promised. Our next guest was intended for a holiday-themed episode, which I missed by about 6 months, but here I am, so let's do it. Our next author is a seasoned hunter with a word of warning to consider as you plan for Thanksgiving. Again, this was supposed to be, please enjoy the author of Claws, the somewhat honorably discharged Captain Kent.
I see you all sitting there, excited for the holidays, ready to see your families and stuff your faces with every sort of delicacy money can buy. Happy to engorge yourselves on heaps of potatoes, buckets of gravy, and mounds of wet bread stuffing. Never even stopping to consider the carnage that lay behind you, or the massacre that surely lays ahead. I'm here to deliver a warning. Not that you'll heed it, you never do. But I have a responsibility to this community, and goddammit, I'm not going down without a fight. So listen to my words, lest you want to wind up on the wrong side of the carving knife this Thanksgiving. The first time you come across the sharp beak psychopath, chills you to the bottom of your soul. The dead eyes without any shred of mercy to be found in them. Every squawk and squaw taunting and teasing its unfortunate prey. For hundreds of years, Americans have foolishly assumed that they were the top of the food chain, letting themselves get fat and lazy off the hormone-injected supermarket sacrifices, never having to fight for their lives as they confront the most savage sack of feathered fury on God's desolate earth, the turkey. No, you don't think about it. You don't think about the flapping demonic presence that clawed its way out of hell only to be roasted and ripped apart on your daintily decorated dinner tables. But the turkeys, the turkeys, they remember. They remember every bite, every slice, every plate of leftovers heaped with the carcasses of their comrades. They remember, and they are waiting to exact their revenge. Every gobble is a threat, A vow to cut your throat and bathe in your blood like so much gravy on a mountain of mashed potatoes. If you hear that sound coming up behind you, you better hope you've done right by your God. Because the judgment is waiting for you under the wing of that wretched warbler. Now you all know me. You all know how I make my living. I'll catch this bird for you. But it ain't gonna be easy, oh no. Not like going down to the market and chasing tofu and tuna rolls. This turkey, oh, he'll swallow you whole. You people are so busy fattening yourselves on the enemy's meat that you don't realize that you're doing him a favor. Dulling your senses, slowing your bodies, making it easier to catch you with your pants wide open and your belly hanging out. All the easier to disembowel with those razor talons and scratchers. You teach your kids to trace their hands and make pretty pictures of the enemy. But you're just desensitizing them to the shape of true evil. A turkey doesn't give a bother about splashing your innards across your dainty tablecloth, bathing its feathers in your blood while you gurgle your last breath. He'll take your rib cage and crack it apart like a giant wishbone. Except you'll only be wishing for a speedy death as he pecks and picks away at your internal organs. You look meaty, I'm just saying they're coming for you. And if you're begging for mercy, oh boy, you'll only find more suffering. Suffering and stuffing a turkey's two favorite holiday treats. I wrote this all just to warn you not to let your guard down, but I know most of you won't listen. Don't come weeping and wailing to me when your family is gutted right in front of you. I ain't proposing a vegan holiday, though. I didn't serve my country just to chew on a vegetable loaf. No, sir. No, I'm saying pick an animal not as keen on revenge. Like a lethargic emu. Or maybe a bison who has folded under the weight of life's indignities. It's harder to find, but it yields enough meat to last until Hanukkah, if you're so inclined to have a kosher celebration. L'chaim. Heed my warning or don't. I've done my duty in warning all of you. The heavy burden of your family's survival is still hefted upon your shoulders. And now you have to decide what you're willing to do to bear this weight. There will be sacrifices, oh yes. I had a bigger family once. The little one didn't run as fast. Not my fault! We trained for this. If it comes down to you or that turkey, though, best be prepared for a feathery fight to the death. May God have mercy on your savory souls.
Okay, let's just move straight along and through. Our next author has the distinguished honor of having won first place in an episode of the Nickelodeon game show Guts back in 1992, but hasn't done much since. Here to promote his tell-all book, I Won the Aggro Crag on Nickelodeon Guts, So Now What? Here is Gary the Bullet Basil.
Hi guys. I'm Gary the Bullet Basil. I am broke and very unemployed. And, you know, if you have money to buy my book, I won the Aggro Crag on Nickelodeon's Guts, so now what? That'd be awesome. They're only $80 a piece. That's quite a, it's a bit of a, I mean, it's a deal, right? It's, I'm giving them away. And, you know, and yeah, you can see the cover up there. It's a it's a really lively color cover. And, you know, it'd be great if you bought it. I could really use a job. The last chapter of the book actually is my resume. You'll notice, the first thing you'll notice on my resume is I've never attended college, and that's because they did not have scholarships for bungee cord basketball, which, quite frankly, is bullshit. You know, it's a tragedy what happened to me. I, on October 17th, 1992, after an incredible display of bungee cord and trampoline athletic prowess, I then proceeded to successfully climb the Aggro Crag and won an episode and won the whole TV show in what a newspaper later described as an episode of Guts. And you know, and it sucks because I feel like I'm this unsung American hero, you know, like, you know, yet here I am unemployed and broke, and it's kind of a shame. I've auditioned for other obstacle shows like, you know, Ninja Warrior and Wipeout and the Titan Games, but I didn't make the cut, you know. I get it. Having an athlete of my caliber is kind of intimidating to the other competitors, you know. And I, you know, they don't want to have a ringer in the show. I understand. It's cool. But you know, I had to write this book to try to support myself, but also to like, to tell my story. And it's a, you know, it's got a lot of really cool, trivia, Nickelodeon trivia, like, Michael Malley's home address. That's, that's in the book. chapter 147 is about this one time I snuck onto the set of Salute Your Shorts to ask out the girl that played Dana, and I got beaten nearly to the inch of my life by Budnick and Donkey Lips. There's a chapter about how I was introduced to PCP by the Temple Guards from Legends of the Hidden Temple. And there's an extended chapter after that about an incredible conversation I had about the mysteries and secrets of the universe with Olmec. It's amazing. And, you know, just for like $80. And, you know, needless to say, I'm having trouble pushing this book. I self-published this book during a brief but bitter stint working at the Federal Express store. I probably should have, I mean, yes, I probably should have just made it an ebook, but I don't know the web. I even sent a few, I sent a free copy to my mom, and she sent it back with a post-it note that just said no. I wish I could have sent one to my dad, but he left my my home at an early age, and I've never known him. It's kind of, you know, it's kind of tragic, actually, but we won't go into that. It's fine because I've gone through my whole life with people not believing in me, but I believe in me, and that's all I needed to win the Aggro Crag and Guts in 1992. And a lot of people don't know this. It's in this book, and I'm going to read the chapter about it. But I actually won the Aggro Crag with a broken neck. Yeah. So I'm going to read that chapter entitled Broke Neck Mountain. right now. So, reluctantly crouched at the starting line, engines pumping and thumping in time, the green light flashes, the flags go up. churning and burning. They yearn for the cup. Or in this case, the AgroCrag trophy. You may be thinking, aren't those the lyrics to He's Going to Distance by Cake? The answer is yes, but it's okay that I use them here because, as we all know, the song was inspired by the story you're about to read. I should also mention that Miley Cyrus would later go on to write a song about me called The Climb, but I digress. The Nickelodeon producers and the show's host, Michael Malley, begged me not to compete after I broke my neck during the Moon Race event, in which the competitors race around the track while jumping with moon shoes on. I had underestimated the springiness of the shoes and the strength of my calves and bounced way too high and slammed into a steel beam high in the Extreme Arena ceiling. My neck cracked like a bundle of fresh asparagus. It hurt. It hurt like a bitch. Long afterwards at the hospital, doctors were baffled and stunned while looking at my x-rays, discovering that my neck bone had been completely severed from the rest of my body. How I had been able to compete or maintain locomotion or be alive while in such a state still has the best medical minds gobsmacked to this day. And that's right. That's the second time in one night you heard someone use the word gobsmacked. Nevertheless, there I was at the foot of the mountain, looking at my destiny at its peak while holding my head with both hands to keep it lolling about like a marionette, as I was, for all intents and purposes, without a functioning neck to do the job. I remember it felt like a moment frozen in time before the tranquility was shattered by Mo the referee's whistle signaling the start of the race. We instantly began scrambling up the crag, racing to the first actuator, which are a series of checkpoints along the face of the mountain that we all had to reach in order to qualify for victory. The first actuator was easy enough to reach, but after that, it got tricky. Midway through the climb, large rocks were released down the mountain in order to simulate a rock slide. People watching at home think that they are harmless foam rocks, but I'm here to tell you that they are very real. Very dense, jagged pieces of stone that can cave your head in if you're not careful. As Mike O'Malley warned us off camera before the event, quote, "The Agro Crag does not fuck around." The rocks missed me, but the kid next to me in purple, Kevin, the iguana, Applewood, he was not so lucky. A large rock hit him square in the face, splattering it as if someone had dropped a bowling ball into warm cherry pie. It's not funny, guys. He really got hurt. I remember seeing him fall off the crag before being swallowed by the ever-present fog that smothered the fake mountain, which was in actuality tear gas designed to simulate the difficulty of breathing in great heights. A replacement boy in purple was quickly dispatched by the producers to take his place. Because as they say, the show must go on. Let me tell you, this boy climbed like he had a rocket up his ass. Meanwhile, my other rival in blue on the complete opposite side of the mountain to me, a girl named Patty the Pepsi Pippin, was impossibly far ahead of both of us, already having reached the last leg of the Agro Crag, which is simply a vertical rock climb. Thankfully, the Pepsi was having difficulty ascending the wall, which bought me enough valuable time to catch up. However, when I reached the rock wall, I hit a snag, an Agro Crag snag. How could I possibly free up my hands enough to climb this thing while also keeping my stupid head from dangling about my shoulders like a broken-ass Stretch Armstrong? I had no time to think. I just had to go for it. So with a leap, I grabbed the first two handholds with both hands as my head horrifically fell backwards and hung hung off my torso like a slinky. It was a strange, almost kind of detached feeling, seeing the arena and everyone stretched out 29 feet below me while still climbing upward. I spotted the referee, Mo, throwing up at the horrific sight of my injury, advertising its severity so graphically on national television. But I didn't let that deter me. It was as if my body was in automatic as I skittered up the rock face, finally reaching the top and pressing the final actuator button to signify my victory. Or so I thought. Only it wasn't my victory. As I reoriented my head, I saw Patty the Pepsi, Pippin, already standing there looking smug in her triumph. To say I was heartbroken would be a massive understatement. It seemed like an eternity before replacement Kevin Applewood finally made it to the summit. I was wallowing in my failure before hearing Mo make an announcement I was not expecting, which set the arena ablaze with scandal. She announced that Patty the Pepsi had been disqualified due to missing one of the checkpoints, thereby making me the official winner of the event and the overall first place champion. Casey, yeah! Thank you. Thank you. So yeah, I mean, I have a whole, the next chapter is about my, the victory ceremony where I was given this piece of the Agro Crag, but it's 42 pages long, mostly due to all my tangents about NATO. The point is, as it stands, one of my proudest moments is that I will, it's one of my proudest moments, and I will never part with this trophy, despite the fact that they later found out that all of these Agro Crag pieces are highly irradiated. Yeah, a lot of the former winners of GUTS have tragically died of cancer or radiation poisoning. You guys don't have anything to worry about. Low-term, short-term exposure like this only results in impotence and being unable to have children. So you're fine. You'll be fine. But, seriously, the knowledge that so many of my GUTS compatriots are dropping like irradiated flies makes me think perhaps none of us ever left the Agro Crag. That's where we're all still making that climb, and if I just ignore the blood in my stool long enough to wait for the rest of my former GUTS champions to fall off the Agro Crag of life, eventually I'll be on the top again, where I belong. Thank you.
And finally, this guest has appeared on our show many times, and as always, insists I mention his two appearances on NBC's Last Comic Standing. Here he will once again read from his forthcoming work, Mustaches and Shades, The Jasper T. Colbert Story. This is Jasper T. Colbert.
This one is, we're going to call this chapter 18, and it's called Return of the Dragon. It had been 3 months since that night in Kansas City when I'd lost my sight. I learned much in that time I'd spent living in Master Yoshi's basement. He had become my friend. He'd become my mentor. He'd become my sensei. And I was also fucking his hot-ass daughter. She was in love with me. I was in love with getting my dick wet. My sight had returned once I learned that only through truly seeing myself could I once again learn to see the world. I looked deep into my own soul, and what I saw was fucking awesome. I'd been laying low, posing as a bicycle flower delivery boy and going by the assumed name of Dat Young Dong. I'd become accustomed to this new life of peace in Korea. I thought for once, this traveling human weapon might be able to rest. I was wrong. The Yakuza still sought revenge for the terrible embarrassment I had caused upon their leader and the horrible disfigurement of his balls. It was a quiet afternoon when I returned to Master Yoshi's flower shop that served as a front for his world-renowned secret dojo. I knew something wasn't right. I found Master Yoshi behind the counter. He was dead. It took me only a minute to realize what had happened. His teacup was shattered, and there was no sign of struggle. Master Yoshi was a bad motherfucker, so I knew it had to be some bitch shit to kill him. Poison. The coward's brass knuckles. Quick as fuck, I scanned the room for clues, but the assassins were good. Probably ninjas. I twisted the head of the statue to open the secret door to the dojo and was not surprised that it had been totally ransacked. All of Master Yoshi's cool-ass katanas and nunchucks had been taken, and his rice paper doors were shredded. All that was left was a note addressed to the White Dragon. Me. Because that's what they called me when I was pro wrestling in Japan. It said, "We have taken Master Yoshi's daughter. If you want to see her again, you will come to Hong Kong. You have 3 days." I spent the next 2 weeks drinking sake. In a downward spiral. Then the second note came. It said, "Hey man, we're serious. We're gonna kill this chick. Come to Hong Kong." I'd successfully put myself in the advantageous position and showed them I wasn't their bitch. It was time to go to Hong Kong to face my past. My flight landed and the chauffeur in a Lone Ranger mask took me to the underground bunker. He had blindfolded me but didn't realize from the time I spent as a blind man had heightened my other senses, and I would be sure to smell my way home if necessary. The ballless Yakuza leader had them tie me to a chair and beat me savagely, but I could not be broken. He said in order to rescue Master Yoshi's daughter, avenge my sensei, and squash our beef, the White Dragon had to soar again. An elite group of billionaires wanted to watch me compete in a deadly tournament. If I won, I would be free. They set up 7 levels of challenges, each more progressively dangerous than the last. 7, each engineered to challenge my body, others my mind, a few my soul, a couple others my body again, but different parts, and finally, my heart. I advanced through each of their custom-built adversities too easily to bother with details here. The Yakuza leader was pissed. He'd wanted to see me dead. When it was time to return Master Yoshi's daughter to me, he double-crossed me. Just as she came across the room, he shot her dead with his bow and arrow. He'd broken our contract, and I was now free to kick the shit out of him and his goons. I moved like a cat, disarming dudes with Uzis and dodging throwing stars. One guy swung a katana right by my face, and I leaned back like this. Just chipped off the top of my mustache. Then I dropped down and did one of those spin leg sweep things. A guy fell down right on top of his sword, dead as fuck. By the time I made it to the Yakuza leader, I was kinda hurt. I had 3 big-ass scratches across my chest, an arrow in my shoulder, and a little trickle of blood coming down from my nose. He backed up to the wall like a bitch. "Please, you already destroyed my balls. What more can you take from me?" I smiled slyly. "Still got a dick, don't you?" I ripped his pecker off and blood squirted everywhere. And he died, a dickless piece of shit loser. I held Master Yoshi's daughter in my arms as she gasped for her last breaths. Then her spirit got up and went and joined her ghost father, and they walked off into the spirit world as they waved goodbye to me. Slowly, the billionaires that was watching began to clap and cheer. White dragon. White dragon. White dragon. I smiled at them. Then I pulled one of the Uzis out from behind my back and unloaded on them motherfuckers. As the smoke cleared, I walked out of the bunker. Dat Young Dong was no more. The white dragon had flown for the last time. It was time for Jasper T. Colbert to go home.
I would like to thank the White Rabbit Cabaret and Planet of the Tapes in Indianapolis, Indiana, and Louisville, Kentucky, respectively, for hosting these live shows that were recorded probably 2 years ago. Who knows at this point? I'd also like to thank you, whatever listeners have remained loyal, for spending an evening with the authors. I'm Dana Glass, and I just don't know what to say. I'm sorry.